You can find LUL Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at LUL Podcast. You can also subscribe to LUL Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Today's episode is all about one of the four fundamental language modalities, reading. We will talk about what reading is, where ACTFL says our students should be at each proficiency level, how we assess it on the IPA. With that, let's get into Level Up. Hi, I'm Brandon Welker, your host for today, joined by my friends and co-hosts Miles Nance, Davin Lemke, and Roger Burt. This is the second part of our mini-series on each of the four language modalities, listening, reading, speaking, and writing. Our episode on listening was a few weeks ago on episode 12, titled Listen Up. We plan to continue that series today, next week, and the week after to round out the others. So we're going to jump in right here. And I'm going to start with, what is reading exactly? And I've always found this to be interesting, but this is just from Wikipedia. But
a trusted resource.
A credible resource.
Or open source, I guess. Reading is a complex cognitive process of decoding symbols in order to construct or derive meaning. The reading process requires continuous practice, development, and refinement. It is a complex interaction between the text and the reader, which is shaped by the reader's prior knowledge, experiences, attitude, and language community, which is culturally and socially situated. So, this is something I just learned last year, and it really stuck with me, that reading is really a two-part thing. It's decoding and comprehending. And decoding is we have to learn to take the actual symbols there on the page, or wherever we're reading them, and convert them to a sound in our minds or a picture in our minds. That's decoding. Comprehension is then understanding what that sound means or what that picture represents. So you're doing both of those things at once. But in short, reading is creating meaning from symbols, and that's influenced heavily by our prior knowledge and experience. Some people can read the same article or the same novel and get completely different things out of it based simply on what they've experienced and what they understand and what interests them. So
I would interject there. The same person could even read the same thing with time, time lapsed in between and come up with a different potential possibility of what they understood or what it was about.
Good point. In fact, I was thinking about, you could, if you planned really well, you could give a reading to a level one kid and then in the next year, the year after, give it to them again with kind of a different task that they're supposed to do, and you probably get completely different things out of it. So,
and Davin had mentioned something like that once. He does with it like a listening. He'll use it multiple times in a class, and not in the same class, but the same school year, but they'll listen to it again and just look for different aspects of it.
Yeah.
So why not for reading too?
And also, Roger mentioned something it's been a few weeks, but you talked about how somewhere you read that reading is also, or I guess they kind of had an alternate modality where you survey a scene and you kind of understand culturally what's happening. Do you recall saying that?
Yeah. What I remember that came from the IPA training that we got at ACTFL, where they talked about the different sources of input, because all input, it needs to be understood or comprehended. And they mentioned viewing. I can't remember. I've lost that train. I'm sorry.
Well, it's fine. It makes sense to me, though, and it seems to me, I don't know how they described it, but it seems to me that it would be kind of a subset of reading or just if reading's the broad category, that viewing's part of it, and you're like kind of making a survey of some scene or something. Like if I were sitting on the hill overlooking a European market, I kind of understand that this is the way that they shop for their produce and things like that in Europe opposed to supermarket here or something.
Yeah. And there could be, I think you've already mentioned it, but I mean, there could be viewing and interpreting what you're seeing And then there also could be viewing as the extra linguistic support.
Yeah.
That you talked about. Yeah.
Right. So just to broaden our kind of minds here a little bit about reading, thinking about not just traditional reading words off a page, but also, and Miles and I were just talking about this earlier, especially with novice, you include a lot of things like signs and images and scenes and pictures, like a weather report, for example. A lot of times you'll see the number and a couple sentences about humidity and the clouds and stuff, but then there's often pictures associated with it, things like that. So that's the viewing with or reading with some viewing support.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, reading's all about interpreting symbols and making meaning out of them, and a lot of that meaning is filtered through experience and prior knowledge. So with that, let's move on to kind of a reminder of what ACTFL expects. And I just assigned you guys to each go over these, but not read everything I've written here, just a few key things. And I kind of did it, well, I did it totally randomly. So, like, Roger doesn't even teach novice level Spanish, but I made you do it. So,
but that's good. It's good for us to all be aware, be very aware of all of the different levels of proficiency and what's required of each, because they build. At the novice level, readers can understand keywords, cognates, formulaic phrases, especially that are highly contextualized. They can get a limited amount of information from highly predictable texts. Some examples would be a hotel bill, a credit card receipt, weather map, like you mentioned earlier, signs, things like that. Like on the stamp test, I really like that, and it's just on my mind because all of my levels 4 and higher have just finished taking the stamp, and I took it with them. And one of the novice level texts is a bus sign, or a sign that you would see if you were seated on a bus in Spanish. And so it's very limited, but there's plenty that you can get from that. There's not a whole lot of text, but you can get meaning from that at the novice level.
I just want to add, though, with novice students, even though the ACTFL guidelines indicate, you know, they're more focused on keywords and cognates, formulaic phrases, there's no point in stopping there. Give them more difficult things. Like I've given my level one students many articles that would easily be in the intermediate, mid, advanced range. They're still able to glean information from it. They're still able to get, and they can do more than we sometimes think they can, I found.
Right.
And maybe it's just for French. I don't know how it is for Spanish and German, but it just feels like they can do more than keywords and cognates, although that's all you should necessarily expect from them. If they're doing more, that's awesome.
But. Right. And I agree completely. I think, like, for example, my classes, their reading scores are, generally speaking, at least, if not, a lot of them are higher than the proficiency level that you would expect at that range. So like my level 4s, the expected interpretive reading level would be at an intermediate mid, but there are a lot that are intermediate high, advanced low, and even some that are advanced mid. So I think they really are capable of more. And we teach just a notch above what we expect. I mean, so yeah, we don't want to just say, well, you're level 1s, so I'm just going to give you cognates all year. Like, that would be ridiculous, and everybody'd go nuts. And like you said, Miles, if you modify the task and not the text, then they can start to understand more and more. And that's where Davin and I, when we were at the conference at BYU this summer, there was a teacher from, I believe it was Copper Hills High, who was doing his master's work at BYU. But he had this awesome text about the Panama Canal. And there were some, like, data points on there, but a lot of it was just straight text. And he said, I looked at it and was immediately like, wow, that's way beyond the level of my students. But is it really? Can I modify what I'm asking them to comprehend from that? He's like, they can get the numbers. They can do the math. They can see agua. They can tell how much water passes through. I can get them to understand that. And that's what I think is really cool. And that's, as we go with the IPAs and as they become more a part of our everyday classroom experience, man, that's such a learning tool, and students can do way more at all levels than what we expect or what the proficiency levels say they can or should be expected to do. They'll never reach more if we don't challenge them to more.
Right. It says highly contextualized, highly predictable texts. And I mean, we all agree, yeah, they should be. But like you said, if it's all cognitive, if a student gets done with the reading in like 5 minutes when it should be taking 15 or 20, you think anyway, and they're done in five, the reading's not challenging enough. But furthermore, like you said, they're not learning anything. What's one thing I like about the IPA is it's really shown me how using readings to learn, not just assess what they know, but to build that vocab. My first year starting, just trying to grab any resource you could that was just in Spanish at all, authentic or not, as long as it was semi, you know, target language kind of stuff. I remember reading texts like, nope, they can't do that. Nope, they can't do that. And I would disregard so many texts thinking, oh, it's too high in the level. And now the mentality has shifted. It's now I look at a text and I think, what can they do in that text? Most of the time you'll find something. Now sometimes, yeah, I still find some readings that it's like, there's not enough there for me to really make it worth the time to be able to teach the kids and have them learn. Some texts still are going to be too advanced. It's not like every single one you come across, the students are going to be able to do it. But to go to a text and say like, okay, this needs to be a novice mid text because my students are novice low. That doesn't make any sense. How do you do that? How do you go one above or two above?
Yeah.
You got to look at the text and think, is there things there that my students can do? And then, yeah, make your task accordingly and then use it again in a couple months when they have more. You know, say, hey, we looked at this text before. Now I'm going to have you focus on these points, and they'll build their language. I'm amazed at how often I put a reading up and I have them focus on the keyword recognition part because that's an IPA thing. And then I will take some of those keyword recognitions and have them use it in their starters the next day at the beginning of class. Most of the time, the students are like, oh, that was in our reading. And it takes a second. Sometimes the word is so challenging that they can't quite remember. But most students will be like, yeah, that means. And then, oh, yeah, that means the same or this. And they're building vocabulary when I'm technically assessing, right? And I think that's one thing we have to keep in mind with the readings is it's also a learning tool. It's not just can they do it, yes or no. It's what can they do? And how can I help them do more with the same reading?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned it on a podcast, but I mentioned it to these lovely gents. My midterm just recently for level ones, I gave them a reading. And along with, I did an IPA-style midterm. Along with that on their writing, I saw, I want to say, 3 to 5 students take one of the words from the keyword recognition, one of the words that they had never really seen before but was a cognate they should have been able to guess, and then go and use that in their writing. So easily tests can be learning tools as well. It's fun to see that.
And they should be. Like really, you think about it, your assessment should be, the focus really should be for student learning.
Yeah.
Too often our traditional sense or our stereotype of tests are, it's that stopping point where we test what you know. Within a foreign language, at least, it should be a learning tool. Really, that should be the whole design of an assessment. I mean, yeah, you have to assess and determine where they are. But if you take it from the approach of what can they learn from this, they do so much better on it as well.
Thanks for that reminder of ACTFL's novice reading expectations. Davin, will you remind us? I put on here intermediate mid. I really probably should have just put all of intermediate, but I kind of put just some highlighted spots. You know, intermediate mid's kind of a major step.
I think at the intermediate level is where students should really start to demonstrate reading between the lines type of things. At the novice level, that's harder. Not to say that we shouldn't try to get them to read between the lines. Novice level is going to be very literal meaning, so surface level kind of interpretations, keyword recognition, stuff like that. In intermediate level, they're going to get into little bit longer texts, but more texts that aren't so, perhaps so visual all the time. You might have a little bit of an email response, some type of a news article or a brief biography or something of that nature where there might be more reading without the visual clues. Not to say that they can't be there, but students should be able to do literal meaning if they read through the whole paragraph, they'll say, okay, this is a general idea. This is what's going on. But then if we could get them to go very deep into the reading itself and ask, what do you think the author meant here? They bring a lot of personal insight and background knowledge into the reading at the intermediate level. That's where we should start getting them to do those things. They're going to still make a lot of mistakes, and they still might get it wrong. I don't know if I want to say it that way, but there's still going to be a lot of misunderstandings. We'll say it that way. Not wrong, but they'll still misunderstand a lot at the intermediate level. But we should be assessing or teaching them how to go deeper into the meeting instead of just saying like, well, the author's talking about his school day. Okay, great. That's a novice kind of thing. What about their school day does he specifically not like? Or I mean, you just kind of start to dig deeper into what do they mean by if they say this sentence, what do you think they mean? Or what do you think this phrase means? Why did they use that? You start to hopefully build a deeper interpretation of what the text is.
I think it's interesting that they talk about, I mean, more than once they talk about that the texts are still short. Not that they have to be, but that's specifically right. Mentioned in there that they're
brief and they're still very familiar.
They're familiar topics.
Yeah, for sure.
They're connected texts, you know, with narration that they can follow. They can start to follow a narration rather than
just a couple bullet points or pictures and
blur,
stuff.
Yeah, right. Little things here and there. Isolated things.
Sentences together.
So we're starting to piece together those isolated things and
right.
You can understand that. But okay. And then the last one I put advanced low, really because that's about as far as we get in high school.
So advanced low.
Yeah.
is basically just an increase from an intermediate level. How about that? Well, nice and simple. And all it gets to there in the actual guidelines is readers understand main ideas and some supporting details.
Well, and then
but the text is going to be much more
narrative
connected.
And descriptive. Yeah.
It's going to be more paragraph form. There's going to be a narrative, for example, or it's going to have a structure to it that it wouldn't be shown in an intermediate type reading. And the comprehension is really going to be, and this is something I noticed when I took the stamp test myself recently, is if you're not too familiar with a subject, your comprehension isn't going to be very high. And that's whether you're familiar with it in the language or not. Because I'm moderately familiar with politics, and I had a reading about politics, and I felt that, you know, because I knew some things, I was able to comprehend a little bit more. So if you're not familiar, or if a student's not familiar with the subject matter, in their native language, they're going to struggle with comprehension. So it really revolves more around what they're knowledgeable about when it comes to those, when it comes to comprehension of those types of advanced texts. But as we've kind of mentioned, we don't set out to try to find advanced texts or intermediate texts or novice texts. We just try to find texts that fit into what we're trying to teach our students, I think. And I feel like most of those texts are probably going to fall in the intermediate range, if not advanced. And then we just modify the questions and things we're asking them to try to do.
So in summary, just really an easy thing in my mind is what we've already kind of said here. Novice level readers can pick out little snippets that are not really connected, but they're formulaic, they're cognates. Some common, regularly used keywords. Intermediate, they start to piece those together a little bit. Still misunderstandings are happening. Topics are still common and familiar, but they're more connected. The texts are more connected and advanced. They're just more complex now. And
and one thing that when building the IPAs, Roger and I have had several discussions about this, and it just comes out that reading is not a linear knowledge. You don't learn in a linear fashion with reading. So students, even at level one, their first year, they're going to be all over the place. They might be able to understand more advanced text on certain subject matter because they're just more familiar with it, or with keyword recognition, they may be able to, contextual, figuring words out based on context or phrases, depending on them and their background and their prior knowledge and whatever, you know, it's not going to be a specific linear fashion. So students are going to be kind of all over the place from level to level.
Okay, Okay, so it's important to understand the ACTful levels to kind of inform our activities that we do in class, and in particular our assessments, which we just talked about, is now the IPA. So I've asked Davin to answer the question, how do we assess students' reading levels, specifically how we have broken up our IPA interpretive section, which I'll just reveal is an evolving section of the IPA, right? We're kind of learning how to do that.
It'll get bigger every time we do the IPA. We'll add a section.
Yeah. And it was probably the most highly discussed section on how to grade that part.
Controversial, sure.
Yeah. But anyway, so tell us what we do, how we assess reading.
So basically the IPA is set up, you have your authentic text, whatever that is. And then there are anywhere from 8 to 9 sections in an actual IPA. We're going to build towards that. About half, maybe a little less than half, are literal comprehension, like surface level stuff. What's the basic? And those are things like keyword recognition, where if you gave them a list of English words, they then go to that text and find the Spanish equivalent of that. But they're not necessarily translating. We're not working on translating. That's not what we're doing at all. It's based off of context. What's this word? Or it's a cognate, or it's a word that they should know because it's been very directly taught to them, should be very familiar to them. But all of those words have to be found in the text. And that's one thing I've emphasized with my students is when we do keyword recognition now, just in a daily reading or something, a lot of students will look at, oh, I know what that word means. But I actually put that there on purpose. So, for example, there was one, I had it starts. Well, in Spanish, there's two words for that. There's empieza and there's comienza. They knew empieza, but the reading had comienza. And so I told them, I was like, it has to come out of the reading. And the reading used that second one. And so I had emphasized that. And that's not a word I taught them, but that's the only word in the sentence it was in that they did not know, that it did not directly teach them. And it was very easy to infer that that's what that word was. Again, this is novice Spanish 1. Then there's the main idea where they just say in English, this is what they're talking about. This is their purpose. This is their basic intent. And then we move in. Now we're going to start moving into this IPA. It's going to have 2 extra sections that we're going to go more into the interpretive comprehension, where they have to really read between the lines and guess off of meaning. One section, for example, that I really like is organization. Like, how do they organize this? And we give them, I think it's 5. There's a few that aren't right to detract from it, and there's 3 that are correct. But they have to go through and they really understand not just, okay, overall, what are they talking about, but how are they talking about it, in what order, and what's the function, what's the purpose. There's other sections to where there's a section that's kind of like keyword recognition, but you really have to do it off of context. So you give them a phrase and you tell them where that phrase is. And then you can either bold part of the phrase saying, what does this bolded part of that phrase mean based off of everything else around it and things like that. So it gives a more in-depth type. What other sections are there?
Author's perspective.
Author's perspective. And that one, that's the one where there's 8 possibilities. Is that right?
Can't remember. I haven't done that one with my students.
I haven't done any of the 3. Okay. There's one where there's 8 and there's like 3 detractors and 5. And I just can't remember which section. Cause we're only building so many sections and we haven't tried all of these as we build towards it. Something to remember with reading in the IPAs is take your time and build it slowly. But the point is, and one thing that people have to realize with reading, cause I was always under the impression like, nope, the reading is in Spanish. The questions are in Spanish. You answer in Spanish, all target language. Now with this IPA, I've come to understand the text is in Spanish, but most of the assessing part should be English because you really want to know what they understand instead of just copy paste kind of a format. So that's something that's been very different. My students have liked it a lot better. Because then they really can express. It's like, yeah. I know what that means, but I can't respond in Spanish.
You can really dig deep that way.
Yeah, they can really explain and justify what they're doing. That's another section where you give them a certain amount of sentences. They have to go into the text and write the number next to that sentence, where it is, circle it. And then there's one more part to that section. What is that? I haven't done that one yet either, but you have.
You circle all the letter of all of the words or phrases that are mentioned in the text. Then you write the letter of that word or phrase next to where it appears in the text. Then back at where the letter and the word or phrase are, you write down some of the words or phrases. You write some of the you write some of the words or phrases that let you know, because that would be the same as identifying it.
Like evidence, the evidence kind of.
Yeah, your evidence. It's like three layers of evidence that you know what it's talking about and where and why. And I really like that section a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, circle the letter of each detail that is mentioned in the article. So you give them four or five letters with phrases.
In English.
Or information in English. But not all of those are going to be in the article.
That's the one with the eight.
Is that what it is? So you give them eight.
Five of them are actually in there. Three are not.
All right. Then they go in and they find it in the article. They put the letter next to it. And then they come back. They circle the ones that are in there. And then, yeah, there's a line where you have to provide more information in
detail about
what it is. And it's just really nice because then you know, because the question's in English, like where does it say or does it talk about a bus schedule and time? Well, they have to know at least something around that type of topic to go into the reading and find, does it talk about a bus schedule? And they go in, they have to look and see where does it talk about it, put the letter there, and then add more information, justification as to why that says that in English. So it really goes into, did you understand the text or is it just words you're getting in basic understanding?
And it seems excessive, but, to have them circle it is, like I said, one layer. Then to have them write the letter next to it is another layer, but they could still have maybe caught one cognate or one thing that tipped them off and they could still be quote unquote getting lucky. So then you add in the third layer of having them write the English of what that is saying that they identified in the second layer.
Right.
And then it's really solidified. Like, okay, yeah, they know what they're doing.
So that's how we're trying to do the readings and assessing the readings. It takes time. I still look at some of the ones I'm trying to create for my just like daily stuff that I'll do keyword recognition every once in a while. And sometimes it's too hard. I'm still trying to refine. You know, well, that's pretty much a cognate. You know, it's hard to do the process. But one thing I would really emphasize with the reading part is number one, it's should be a learning tool. I mean, they're going to learn so much by having all these different sections. Cause at eight sections, most teachers are like, I don't have time for that. That's a long time.
Oh, but you'll have time once you see.
But you look at it, it's like, yeah, but look at what you can teach your kids and look what your kids are going to learn. Look at what you're going to be able to do and look at how much you're going to know about your students and what they can do. And look at how much you're going to know about where to take them in the future based off of these eight sections. And really, I mean, time wise to me, this is not a waste of time at all. Plus it takes that the whole reading eight sections. I'm going to throw out a guess. What, 45 minutes maybe?
Yeah, it could be. And then just think for planning. If you want to practice this or work on it, find an article, build your whatever. And you've got half your class done. Or if you're on
practice feedback,
not
before,
a block schedule, you've got, you know, and then you've got time at the end. Okay. We're done with it. You've turned it in, but let's kind of go through it and make sure you understand it.
Right.
Which is part of it as well.
I'm amazed at how many times my students, when I've done an IPA type thing, they'll still read, they'll go back and focus on a sentence like, oh, that's what that's. I mean, they read it earlier. Like, they always go through and do a pre-reading. But it's when you have them focus on different parts of the reading, then it's like, oh, that's how you say that. And then they can build and remember it that way and their language improves. At the same time that you're assessing them.
Yeah. My level fours today, started an IPA for end of term. And as we were reviewing, and I just asked, you know, here's the keyword section. Was there anything that anyone struggled with? And someone, you know, threw out a word that they had a hard time finding and a kid raised his hand. He says, I found that. I said, please tell us how did you come to what was your answer and how did you come to that conclusion? And he says, I didn't get it the first time. And he says, but when I was doing the guessing meaning from context, he's like, I had to guess this word that was close to it, that was bolded and all of that. And he says, And as I was reading that, all of a sudden it came to me. So it's like, yeah, that's the exact
recall point, yeah.
Is going through, and all of these portions are to help make sure that the student understands more fully the text that they're interacting with. And yeah, not a waste of time at all, because they, like we mentioned a couple weeks ago, they walk in, see a text that looks maybe overwhelming, and then they leave realizing like, holy cow, I can understand way more of that text than I initially thought. And they've learned a great deal in the process.
Okay, well, that's the plan for our IPAs. We're going to start adding those sections in. I've actually found it really refreshing and eye-opening that all this is done in English. I just want to say that again. Like,
that was very different.
Like, you can really, yeah, you can really get the scalpel in there, I guess, if it's if it's like in English violent and they're answering questions. And it made me think of like the SAT. In the high school I was in, we had to take the SAT and the ACT, but SAT in particular, it seems like there's a ton of reading comprehension questions, and it's almost the same. I mean, the texts are very advanced, probably even superior in some cases, but you're being asked questions like, which statement best represents the author's, stance on this subject, and, what's another word that you could replace this particular word with, and it would still retain the meaning that the author intended, things like that. So anyway, reading comprehension is really a multifaceted thing, and I'm just filibustering right now. That's all I'm doing.
Well, I remember my first year, Gwen Cannell and Tawny Johnson at Syracuse Junior High were doing a training. It was like multiple weeks about reading. And they talked about assessing reading in English. And I remember just thinking like, oh, come on, you're crazy. Like, why would we do that? 90% target language use, right? And then, as I went through the course and as I got to talk with them, the more it started making sense. And I was still a little skeptical, but then with time more and more, you have to. I mean, that's how you see, like you say, inside the student's mind. And it's not necessarily the easiest thing to grade, because there is room for variant answers. But it's how you really get in there and see like, okay, are you just flat wrong, or are you pretty darn close? And is what you're thinking making sense? And you can really see the path leading up to the decision. And it's really, really nice. I've got a question. I've been kicking this around a little bit, so it'd be good to get your guys' opinions, but I've been kicking around the idea of starting a unit with an IPA and introducing vocab that way, just because I think, man, they'd learn so much, and those things seem to stick when they,
yeah, they do.
Do those. Yeah. So what if I, like, would it be too much to start? Because I've done some a little ways in, halfway through, at the end of units, but I've never led one off with one, and I just wonder what might be the effect. So I'm curious what you guys think.
With a shot, I'd say.
What if the, I don't know how to word this, the end of term or the end of unit is actually an IPA for the next unit?
Yeah.
To gauge kind of, yeah, we've been doing this, but we're going to actually kind of move on. And that's something that we've talked about, and I think we've talked about all four of us, the idea of not having units that are entirely separate from each other. You just kind of flow from one to the other. And that would play together. I don't know though, as far as the students would go, or as far as the students are concerned, I don't know how they would do. That's kind of an interesting concept though, I think.
Yeah. I'm just curious. Brandon? And I think I might do it. Maybe with all levels, starting the fourth term, just to see. I don't want to screw them up, but I don't think that that's going to.
Well, you think about it too. If you do a beginning IPA, middle, and then an end, or however you want to do it, that first IPA, you're going to focus on cognates and highly contextualized things in you. It's not like that first IPA is going to be extremely challenging anyway. Does that make sense? Like, I would think your first one, you're going to really make sure it's highly contextualized. And
that's true.
There's a lot of heavy cognates.
At all levels. Because it's completely new vocab. Yeah.
Yeah. But why not use an authentic text to teach?
Right.
You know, and turn that into an IPA. I think it's a great idea. it is a shift. I mean, it'll take some time to prep it differently, but I don't like the way that I teach vocabulary personally. I don't. I mean, it works. They get it memorized, but I think to really acquire the language and then be able to output what's being inputted, I think doing that through an authentic text in an IPA form is so much more effective than just giving them a picture with the word underneath it and then a question where they practice just putting the word in where the dots are, because that's just too mechanical. It's too robotic.
Right.
I mean, it works. I get them to do it. And then after a day or two of that, then I bring in a reading or something to reinforce it. So, I mean, I build it up. But I think starting with an IPA is a great idea. It can't, I don't think it can hurt them any,
yeah.
It can't be any worse.
Do you think it sticks with them because, or maybe part of the stress of it being a test, it also sticks with them? You know what I mean? Or,
I don't know.
But if it's the norm of the class, would you really even call it a test?
Right.
Yeah. If it just becomes the norm that, hey, here's this IPA, here's what we're learning, here's the reading.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even think of it as a test after a while.
What if you use that reading or whatever? Maybe you do a listening instead of a reading. But what if you use that? Oh, stick with reading since that's the topic of the day, the topic du jour. What if you take that and then that's the discussion point for the next 2 or 3 class periods or more?
Right.
Just to keep talking and using that vocabulary and keep introducing, and then so maybe it's like in every few weeks there's a new quote IPA where you're introducing a little bit more. And you talk about that new article or that new listening for a few days of class or a couple weeks of class or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like throughout the year, that's kind of been my approach, is like portions of IPAs every day. Like I never want my kids to just read something just for the sake of reading. If they're going to read something, then I want them to write about it or to speak about it. I don't want to measure things just in isolation. And then I've done full IPAs, whether it's really felt like a test or not. I've done like quote unquote full IPAs all throughout terms. My level threes, we did one on dating, a couple weeks ago that like I took a lot of time on, really built this IPA, and, the kids just, I mean, for them, it felt like just another day in class. Literally the only difference was I said, take everything off your desks. And in that class, those two classes, I didn't even get any groans. Cause usually that's the indicator. It's like, oh, shoot, this is
test time.
Yeah, this is test time, which is what I did get today from my level fours. But at the same time, when they were done, I was just like, well, how was that? Was that the worst thing in the world? And they're like, that was easier. Well, I still have a few questions, but yeah, it wasn't bad. So yeah, like Davin was saying, hopefully that just becomes such the norm or just so standard in class that it's like, we're measuring all the time anyway. Like, what difference does it make whether I have my stuff on my desk or not?
Yeah.
One, and you transfer the ownership to the students. If they know every day I'm responsible for building off of what we're doing in class, instead of just the obvious, okay, here's your notes. That's not a lot of student-driven learning, really. Here's your notes. It's still very old-school, kind of teacher-driven kind of stuff. But I want to read. Can I read something, Brandon?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can do that or an analogy, but I don't want to steal your thunder. So this is in chapter 5 of the Implementing Integrated Performance Assessment Actful book. It says, basically they've made a shift of what assessments used to be. And then there's a bullet pointed list of what, as it says, a different role of assessments is now. It says, it should be part of a learning culture, which is what our IPAs focus on. It should be dynamic and ongoing, which would implement your, if I start at the beginning and I do one frequently, a tool for evaluating prior knowledge, which again you're building, ongoing feedback cycle between students and teachers, a vehicle for transfer of knowledge and skills, a communicator of explicit criteria, a means for student self-assessment, which if you start with an IPA, that also would really help them understand, here's what I do know for sure, here are some things I don't know, I need to learn those things. An evaluative and self-reflective tool for teachers, and the locus of research. I don't know.
It sounds like a movie or something.
I don't know what that last one means. Locus of research. L-O-C-U-S.
I'm pretty sure that CA is the TV movies, the librarians.
Yeah, the old school. The librarians. Just put a bug right in front of the camera to make it look big. And,
yeah, the librarians, the locus of research.
Locus is like a center.
Is that what, so, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
so that was what I was thinking. I was going to infer off of context.
In Spanish, as eje.
I thought it was those things the seagulls ate here in Utah.
So down below that, there's a model. So a cyclical approach to second language learning and development. At the top, it says modeling, and then it says practice, and then perform, and then feedback. But then after the feedback, it says practice again, perform, and then it goes back to modeling. And that's just one circle. So the model and feedback happen once in the cycle, but practice and performing happen twice. So why not start with an IPA at the beginning, teach, inform, instruct, and then you end with the IPA as part of that learning cycle?
So if you're,
going
back to Bonnie's skiing analogy, really, it's like you're saying if your classroom's at the bottom of the hill, you start them off with just go up there, ski down. We kind of look at where you had problems. Let's talk about it. Talk about some of the theory, how you can fix it, some strategies. Head back up there, ski down again.
Yep. Right. Show them a different. Why didn't you take that route off to the right? It's like, well, I didn't know if I could do it, or I didn't know how to go off that little bump.
Yeah.
You know, then you kind of instruct. Well, this is how you do it. You know, whatever. And then okay, now go try that again. It's the same slope, but then hopefully they see that they can do more, so they can go off into the trees if they want or whatever. Yeah.
And I think where teachers get hung up, myself included sometimes, is when you say you're going to introduce new vocabulary in a test, I guess. So, but it's really just rethinking how we're thinking about it. Like there's a set of skills that you're always testing along the way that should be applicable in any situation, right? That's kind of one conclusion we've made so far in the podcast, with proficiency, is there's a general set of skills that work in any situation. And that's largely what we're testing. And then we introduce new vocabulary and things at any time and see how they handle it, right?
I would agree, yeah.
So.
And reading really is going to be the best tool. You know, going back to the focus. I remember when I was in high school, I did not have a very high or very large vocabulary, like a high number of academic words where some of my peers were throwing out words and I was like, dang, how do they know how to do that? So I asked my English teacher one time, I was like, I loved to read, but clearly I was not reading as much as other students were. And she told me, she said, just read. She said, you really want to learn the language and culture. And she said, just read. And think about it, in our classes, we should have them read every day. We've talked about statistically, and Bonnie's mentioned it numerous times, the second best way, and I can't remember what the first one was actually, unfortunately, but one of the best ways of getting students to really acquire the language and learn it is free reading. It's just have them read stuff in the target language, and they pick up so much with that.
Well, we did want to share some resources with you today, but we've decided intra-podcast here to just post them on our website. So please visit lulpodcast.com for some language-specific websites for some of our favorite resources. And there are millions out there. We live in an age that, I mean, you can really find anything if you take the time. Even German, I'll just put in a plug for German here. They don't come quite as easily, but with Google, I mean, it's all out there. There are some favorites of mine that I've found over the last couple of years, and we'll put those along with some French and Spanish specific favorites of ours for some possible readings. Some among millions you could find, but, we'll put them up on the website. So we're just going to wrap up today. I wanted to share just one thing I found. This came from the Professional Development Service for Teachers, which turns out is from Ireland, actually. But they had this whole thing about reading and keeping kids excited and motivated to read. And I've been through phases in class where it's not as exciting and I've had them read things. Even when I've said, okay, you got 10 minutes to go read whatever you want, some of them just don't make the effort to find some things. So, they had these four bullets on this whole thing about reading, and this is how to keep kids excited. And there's nothing earth shattering here, but, they have interesting and rich texts. And I think that's something we don't do enough. Like, you can find texts that are completely random, things that don't even fit really directly into the vocabulary of that section, but you can relate it. Choice of texts, what kind, you know, is it a book, is it an article, is it a poem? They specifically mentioned that we should use more poetry. Authentic purposes for reading. Roger just referred to this earlier in the podcast, that they always connect it to something that's authentic. So they need to turn it into, they need to write about it, reflect on it, speak about it, connect it to another idea that we've already talked about. And that keeps kids motivated and they see the purpose for that reading. And then, just, they have opportunities to explore, interact, and experiment with the text. And I think that this, they all kind of go together here, but you take that text and it opens up a whole nother discussion about things. If you have a little text about Mardi Gras, I'm just using this as an example. I don't really know much about Mardi Gras, but,
you know enough.
A French celebration, right? Fat Tuesday. And you take that and you let them explore where did that come from and experiment with it and maybe try to write their own, announcement of Mardi Gras or something like that or party invitation or I don't know. Anyway, you extend it, taking those texts and extending them. And it's almost like a fun challenge to find a completely random text, but with kind of some interesting tidbits and then bring it to your class and see how they can connect it and how you can ask them to connect and then really extend that. And I think that's kind of something I'm learning in my teaching is that you don't have to spend hours and hours and hours to find the perfect text. You can kind of pick up little things here and there that kind of fall into your lap and turn it into a really great discussion. And I think that keeps kids motivated when it's fresh things that you just, you know, even in your regular social media perusing or reading the news or books you're reading and you come across a quote or something that happens to be associated with the language you teach. I think all that can be brought in. It can be interesting to the kids. So reading, one of the four modalities that we'll be talking about speaking and writing in the upcoming weeks. Reading and listening, the interpretive modalities really lead into all these other things that have to do with speaking and writing. And so they are really important. But with that, we'll wrap up and we'll just leave you with the challenge to look for more texts and share these things. You can share them on our website or just with people in your department. It does help to share things because looking for things takes some time. But we can broaden our preconceived idea of what a reading should look like and really bring in a lot of things that we haven't before. And also going with, what Davin talked about with the IPA, I think the way that we assess through the IPA can really teach us a lot about how to ask our kids questions in class. And I shouldn't say kids because that's kind of condescending, but our students in class. It really, that part of the IPA book was probably the most, like, I learned the most from that section, learning about how to ask kids about reading and ask different things like that. So, and Roger reminded me that IPA books are on their way for everyone in the Davis School District or every department
that ordered
should
them
be, yeah,
in the Davis School District. So you guys can take a look at that. And with that, I will say auf Wiedersehen.
Adios.
Hasta luego.
A plus.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up.